Reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, verse number 6. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Verse 6.
Karmindriyadi Samyamya.
Karmindriyadi Samyamya.
Yaaste Manasa Smaran.
Yaaste Manasa Smaran.
Indriyartan Vimudhatma.
Indriyartan Vimudhatma.
Mityachara Sa Uchyate.
Mityachara Sa Uchyate.
Karmendriyani Samyamya.
Karmendriyani Samyamya.
Yaaste Manasa Smaran.
Yaaste Manasa Smaran.
Indriyartan Vimudhatma.
Indriyartan Vimudhatma.
Mityacharak Sa Uchyate.
Mityacharak Sa Uchyate.
Karma Indriyani.
Karma Indriyani.
The five working senses. The five working sense organs.
Samyamya,
Samyamya,
controlling,
controlling.
Yaha,
anyone who,
aste,
remains,
manasa,
by mind,
smarad,
thinking.
Indriya artad,
sense objects.
Vimudha, foolish. Atma,
soul.
Mitya achara,
pretender.
Saha,
he.
Uchyate,
is called.
Translation in purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. One who restrains the senses and organs of action, but whose mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. Purport. There are many pretenders who refuse to work in Krishna consciousness but make a show of meditation, while actually dwelling within the mind upon sense enjoyment. Such pretenders may also speak on dry philosophy in order to bluff sophisticated followers. But according to this verse, these are the greatest cheaters. For sense enjoyment, one can act in any capacity of the social order. But if one follows the rules and regulations of his particular status, he can make gradual progress in purifying his existence. But he who makes a show of being a yogi while actually searching for the objects of sense gratification must be called the greatest cheater. Even though he sometimes speaks of philosophy, his knowledge has no value because the effects of such a sinful man's knowledge are taken away by the illusory energy of the Lord. Such a pretender's mind is always impure, and therefore his show of yogic meditation has no value whatsoever. So, Krishna here is decrying misuse of the principles of yoga. Patanjali Muni has given a basic definition of yoga practice. Yoga indriya samyamaha. This is not actually what we would call swarup lakshana, or essential definition. Because is that all that yoga amounts to, is controlling your senses? If you get very sick, that's also control of the senses. You just get very sick and you can't eat. That's a kind of sense control. Is that yoga? Or a person is put into prison. He's not free to go here and there. That's a control of the senses also. So just controlling the senses is not the whole purpose of yoga. It's just describing what the activity involves. It's a tattvastha lakshana, or secondary definition. Just like in the Vedanta Sutra, Vyasadeva defines what is the absolute truth. Atato Brahmagyasa is the first sutra. It presents a question. Now we should inquire into what is Brahman? What is the Supreme? And then he gives immediately a definition. But again, it's a secondary definition. Janmadyasya yatoha. The Supreme is that from which comes the creation, maintenance, and destruction of this whole world that we're living in. This, the visible world, is created by, maintained by, and destroyed by Brahman, the absolute truth. But is that all Brahman is? Creator of the material world? We understand, those who know the science of God, who've read Bhagavad Gita at least, and maybe read Srimad Bhagavatam, they know that God has many activities, and creating the world is the least glorious thing that God does. Least glorious. He has his pleasure pastimes. He has his own kingdom, Vaikuntha, where he enjoys loving exchanges with his devotees. Not just creating a material world. He's not just an engineer or constructor of some universe. Like the government is obliged to build a prison house. But it's not that the government is loved by the citizens for the wonderful prison house they built. They like that they built schools and roads. It's things they can use. The prison house is for the criminals. And the government has to do it. But it's the least glorious thing the government does, is build the prison. Similarly, the least glorious thing that God does is build this prison, the material world. So Vyasadeva, in order to at least begin explaining, discussing what is Brahman, to give a definition, a working definition, with which you can discuss, he says, okay, anybody can understand this world. Understanding the kingdom of God, that's beyond the capacity of ordinary people. But everybody can understand, here's this world we're living in. Where did it come from? It came from Brahman. That's what Brahman is. The creator of the world that you're living in. You don't know any other world. So we'll define it in terms of this world. Similarly, what's a cow? This is classical nyaya. So a cow has many functions. I keep a cow to take milk. I keep a cow because the cow is embodiment of religion. 30 million demigods live in the body of the cow. So many reasons for a cow. But the definition given by the logicians is sasnadiman chatushpadam, chatushpada jantur, four-legged creature, animal, with this funny thing under the neck, dewlap. Although the Videshi cows don't have it, but the real cows have this sasna, dewlap, under the neck. That's an adequate definition of cow, but it's not a complete definition. It distinguishes a cow from a horse, and a cow from a rock. You know, it's alive, it's a living being, it's an animal, and it has four legs, and also it has a dewlap, which the horse and the pig don't have. So it doesn't tell you everything about cow, but at least you have a definition you can start talking about cows with that definition. You can start talking about Brahman with the definition. that from which everything is created, everything in this world. And definition of yoga. Yoga Indriya Samyama. That is in the beginning of the Patanjali Yoga Sutra, given as the definition of yoga. Yoga is to control your senses. Basic working definition. It doesn't tell everything about yoga. He's writing a whole book about what yoga is, but he's just giving a definition. So at least you know what the book is about. But that definition is misused. There are pretenders, as Krishna is discussing in this verse, who externally control the outward senses and impress everybody with the fact that they're such great yogis. Just like you can see where I live in Govardhan. On the Parikrama Marg, around Govardhan Hill, sometimes yogis come. Although it's not a place for impersonalist yogis. You don't see too many Advaitavadis there. Very few. They go to Vrindavan. But Vrindavan is on the route of the Advaitavadis. They go to Vrindavan, then they go to Haridwar, and then they go someplace else. You can take the bus from Vrindavan to Haridwar, 10 hours. You know, and the sadhus go, the Advaitavadis. Many Advaitavadis in Vrindavan. But in Govardhan, very few. But sometimes the yogis come, because there's money to be had. You know, so many yatris are coming. On some weekends, Guru Purnima, 2 million people, 3 million people coming. You can sit on the sidewalk and make several hundred rupees, just sitting there, begging. And if you put this tilak on, then you make 500 rupees. Yeah. But some think it's good business to make a show of being a yogi. So they'll dig a hole in the ground and stick their head in the ground, you know, under the ground. And their friend will cover up that you've seen. Or they'll stand up, you know, held up by some planks, standing on one leg. Other tricks. Okay, not that doesn't include the man with the plastic leprosy. Yeah, the leper is lying there, and then you see in the evening he pulls off the leprosy. It's made out of plastic and goes home. Yeah, anyway, he's not a yogi. But these are false yogis. Maybe that's a gross example. Just to make some money, you're sticking your head in the ground for a few hours, and you're breathing through a pipe. Yeah. But there's different degrees of hypocrisy. The basic description Krishna is giving here is that you're externally, there's different senses. There's 11 senses. 5 Gana Indriyas, 5 Karna Indriyas, and then don't forget the 11th, the mind. The mind is the most important. It's a central sense. Antakaranam, the inner sense. So the Gana Indriyas are input devices. They bring in information from the outside world. The ear hears. The eyes see. So on. And then the output organs are the karmendriyas, including the hands, the legs, the genitals. These act outwardly. So a yogi can close his eyes, pretend not to be using his ganendriyas or karmendriyas. Immobile, eyes closed, apparently not paying attention to anything. But what's going on in his mind? This is what really distinguishes a yogi from a pretender. One who does not have any connection with the Supreme, one who has not developed the prerequisites for actual meditation, who has not studied and practiced the actual 7-8 steps of yoga, yama, niyama, major and minor regulative principles, like being clean, being honest, being celibate, meditating on God, speaking the truth, these are prerequisites. And then practicing asana, sitting properly and performing different physical exercises for purifying the channels of prana within the body. And then when your pranas are flowing freely and properly, then you can begin to actually practice breath control, pranayama. Then after pranayama, is pratyahara. You have to start withdrawing the senses from external things. If you haven't gone through these steps to make a false show of withdrawing from the outside world, it's hypocrisy. You're making a show of pratyahara, of withdrawing your senses, but have you actually practiced all the other steps up to that? Have you actually begun to control your mind? So Krishna is saying that a so-called yogi who is subduing his external senses, but his mind is dwelling on sense enjoyment, on materialism. He's not actually fulfilling the purpose of yoga at all. Yes, yoga is, the basic definition says, indriya samyama, control the senses. But for what purpose? For the purpose of disconnecting yourself with materialism and connecting yourself with the spiritual reality. Otherwise, why call it yoga? Call it something else. Yoga means connection. But to connect to something I'm not connected, like my electric device radio is here. The plug is sitting on the floor. That AC, no batteries in the radio, the AC radio. If the plug is sitting on the floor, the electric outlet is over there, I won't get any radio reception because it's not connected. So I have to practice yoga. I have to make a connection. Yoga is connection. Or you study in school. Yoga is arithmetic addition. 1 + 1 = 2. Connect two things. Yoga. From yujdhatu, to join. So I have to take the plug and move it. I have to change the location from the floor to the wall socket. There has to be a change, a transposition. So like that, you have to change from absorption in materialism to absorption in the Transcendental Supreme. There has to be a movement, a change. If the so-called yogi has not changed, if in his mind he's still thinking of materialistic things, then he's a pretender. The words Krishna used are very sharp. Vimudhatma. He's not only fooling other people, he's fooling himself. And therefore he's a cheater. He's acting falsely. Mitya achara. What he's doing is a false show. Now there's different degrees though. It's not just the most obvious hypocrisy. The man who's making a show of some trick just to make money or collect followers. There are more subtle forms of hypocrisy. Sense gratification is not just gross sinful activity, but all kinds of activities which are for your own pleasure rather than for the pleasure of God are in the category of sense gratification, and they're all considered cheating. Krishna says in the Gita, Yagya Shishya Shino Santa, Yagya Shishya Shino Pa'apa. Santo, Muchyante Sarva Kilbishai, Bunjite Te Twagam Pa Pa, Ye Pachanti Atma Karanat. The saintly persons are freed from their sinful reactions because they only eat food which has been offered in sacrifice for the pleasure of God and His devotees. Prasad. They don't eat bhoga. They offer bhoga to God and they take what God leaves behind as his remnants, his prasad. Saintly devotees don't eat anything else but God, but the prasad of the Lord. That doesn't mean they'd starve when they don't go to the temple, mandir, to get prasad. They offer it in their home. Everything they cook in their house, they cook for Krishna. And then offer it to Krishna, and then only they eat. Just like a brahmana should keep shalagram shila, worship it every morning, and he should not eat until after he does Shalagram Puja. First he feeds God, and then he eats. That is a Brahman. Otherwise, those who cook for themselves and not for God, they're verily eating only sin. Even if they are strict vegetarians, no onions, no garlic, no carrots, no tomatoes, nothing red, still they're eating only sin. Only sin. Bunjate tu papaneva. Bunjate. They're eating only sin because they're not offering it to God. So that also is not only sense gratification, it's sinful sense gratification. There is punya and papa, two categories of selfish enjoyment. So the demigods headed by Indra in Swargaloka, they're enjoying punya, but it's also selfish. They're listening to the Gandharvas sing and the Apsaras dancing, drinking soma rasa, enjoying life. That's sense gratification, but it's punya, it's pious. We worship Indra in the Rig Veda, but he's a sense enjoyer. Excuse me, Hare Krishna. I shouldn't criticize. But the demigods in general are enjoying life. And they have a right to, they've earned it. But it's also sense gratification. There's good sense gratification, bad sense gratification, but it's all material. From the transcendental point of view, the bhakti yogis, well, the yogis reject sense gratification. The impersonalist yogis try to reject everything and become inactive, but that's not practically possible. The bhakti yogas have a practical program. You have to engage your senses, but engage them in the service of the Lord. Prapanchakataya, no, wrong verse. Anasaktasya vishayan yataham upayunjataha nirbandham krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyam uchyate. Without being attached to sense enjoyment, accept the objects of the senses. Like you have to eat food. Eat food consecrated to God. You're obliged, you're a family man, you're obliged to have children and raise a family. But do it. Raise your children. And your family as devotees of God. Do business to maintain your family so they can become devotees. This is appropriate renunciation. Devotees will accept everything that's useful for Krishna's service and reject everything not useful for Krishna's service. That is a higher principle of yoga. Because that way you don't have to take the risk of inappropriate renunciation, premature renunciation, where you'll run away from your family and your obligations and go to the forest to practice yoga. And you'll sit there and you'll think about sense gratification while you're practicing. If you're not ready for it, that's what you'll do. With all good intentions, you'll become a hypocrite. Not an obvious way. You didn't mean to cheat anybody. You're not doing it just for money. You're out in the forest all by yourself. But still, you'll think of some form of sense gratification. That's why the impersonalists, even after they've become so-called paramahamsas, they come back down and engage in mundane welfare work. Build hospitals and schools. It's nice to build hospitals and schools, but it's material work. Why is a paramahamsa building hospitals? Yeah. That's a business for doctors and grihasthas to donate the money to the doctors to build a hospital. But the paramahamsa sannyasi, what does he have to do with fixing up the plumbing in the bodies of sick people? Yeah. He should know the body, everyone's going to die. He's not going to save anybody from dying by building the fanciest hospital in the world. Everybody who goes to the hospital will still die. Every one of them. Maybe in the hospital, maybe after they go home. Maybe after 50 years, but they'll all die. So what is accomplished? It's certainly not the activity of a paramahamsa, of a yogi, to be coming back down to engage in mundane welfare work. Of course, devotees can do some good for society, but the real good is to give spiritual education. Not to do anything material. Other people can do the material welfare work. But what Krishna's going to talk about in the very next verse is this is what not to do. Krishna isn't only talking negative. He tells in the next verse what to do. And that is to use your senses practically in the service of the Supreme. Don't prematurely jump into a kind of renunciation you're not ready for. But stay in your position for now and use what you have in the service of God. This is the higher principle of renunciation. It is being taught here by Krishna himself. He's talking to Arjuna. He's trying to make a point to his friend Arjuna that, Arjuna, you want to just walk away from the battle and go back into the forest and meditate. But you're not a meditator, you're a kshatriya. You're not that kind of yogi. I'll teach you how to be a better yogi. Yogi naam api sarve sham madgate nantaratmana shradhavan bhajate yomam same yukta tamo mataha. This is the best yogi. Not run away from your duty and go pretend to meditate when you're not trained up to do it. But, and it's not just do your duty and give your results to me. That's karma yoga. Krishna's talking about something higher than that. The highest, not the karma yogi, but the bhakti yogi is the highest. Shraddhavan, a person who has faith. What kind of faith? This is defined by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In his instructions to Sanatana Goswami, as recorded in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Shraddha Shabde Vishwas Kohe Sudvida Nishchoy. Krishna Bhakti, Krishna Karma Koile Sahava Karma Krito Hoy. This is Bengali. Faith means not just belief, especially belief in something you can't prove. You use science to establish what you can prove, and then you have to go to religion for what you can't prove. No, that's not what we mean by faith. That's why hardly anybody studies religion in school. You can't make a living on it. Even 3 years ago I was here, we wanted to try putting my son in the Gurukula. So we went to the Pejwar Swami and they agreed, the junior Pejwar Swami agreed to put my son in the kindergarten of the Pejwar Mutt. He was there for a few weeks. And we were inquiring, what happens to the best students? What do you do with the best students in your school, when they graduate? Because they have the kindergarten and they have the regular Gurukula up to adulthood. And they said, the smartest students, they become engineers and doctors. And the mediocre ones, we train them up to become Purohits. The ones who are not so good. They admitted. We really should promote spiritual education. There are plenty of doctors. Why do you need a Gurukul to train doctors and lawyers? Better you go to a regular high school. Rather, we should use everything we have in the service of Krishna. Rather than be a pseudo-renouncer, a pseudo-transcendentalist, with all your good intentions becoming a hypocrite, rather to be honest and in the position you're in now, do everything you do for the pleasure of Krishna. I'm sorry, I was talking about what Krishna considers the best yogi. Shraddhavan. He has faith. Conviction that if he works simply for Krishna, considers Krishna his master, Krishna his support, and depends on Krishna for everything, and doesn't worry too much about other obligations. Serve your family, serve your country, but subordinate to the service of God. First, the service of God. Because God will take care of you and provide everything you need and preserve everything you have. Yogakshemam Vaham Yoham.
The Insurance Company of India, that is their motto. They don't understand what it, I don't think they understand. They're talking about, we're actually talking not about buying insurance, but about going to Krishna and taking insurance from him, depending on God completely. That, Krishna says, Shravanam Bhajate Yomam, the person who has faith and who worships me. There's a difference between puja and bhajanam. Puja is formal worship. Like the dukandar, every morning, he before starting business, he takes, opens his cash register, takes out the agarbati, and waves it in front of Lakshmi, to bless his cash register. That's puja, business deal with your deity. Bhajana is worship with love, not to get a profit, but just out of love. That is bhajanam, different from puja. Bhajate yomam, one who worships me with love, not just coming to me to do business, to make some profitable exchange. I'll offer you this, and I expect that in exchange. No, that's not worship. That's business deal. Bhajate, one who actually worships me with love, who has faith in me, trust, that if I just depend on Krishna and work just for Krishna, everything, my family, my country will be satisfied. Everything will be taken care of. What's the beginning of that verse? Shadavan Bhajateva. I can't remember. Yoginam. Yoginam api sarvesham. Of all the yogis, Madgatena antaratmana. His antaratma, the mind, is not is avoiding sense gratificatory thoughts, not by externally trying to control his senses, but by filling his mind with thought of God. By thinking about Krishna, manmana bhava manbhakto, think about me all the time. Then you won't have any opportunity to think about selfish sense gratification. That's the key to becoming the greatest devotee. Anyway, I don't want to give away next verse. That will be explained by Krishna in verse number 7. Hare Krishna. So I'll stop. Are there any questions or comments? Anything?
Krishna is the cause of all causes.
Yes.
So even the pretender, Krishna is the cause
of
pretenders.
He doesn't make him pretenders. It's not Krishna's fault that someone becomes a hypocrite. Krishna creates us with some autonomy, not complete independence, but we have some free will to be honest or to cheat. Or in other words, to be dependent on Krishna or to try to be independent. In which case we can't become independent, we're not capable of it because we're not God. Only God is independent. So if we try to become independent, we end up becoming dependent on Maya, on Krishna's immaterial energy. That's our choice. It's not Krishna's fault. We choose, and we choose it every minute. We can switch from one side to the other, just like the politicians can quit one party and join another at any moment, or make a new party, or split a party in half or three pieces. So like that, we can change allegiance at any moment, from Maya to Krishna or back the other way. It's our choice not to be blamed on Krishna. So if someone becomes a hypocrite, it's his own choice. Krishna didn't made him, but he didn't make him a hypocrite. He made him autonomous with the choice to be honest or a hypocrite. We're all hypocrites, unfortunately, because we're not fully surrendered to Krishna. To maintain any selfish program, any selfish agenda, is actually hypocrisy. To not be completely surrendered to Krishna. So until we become completely surrendered, we're still, to some percentage, hypocritical. So we should try to give that up. That's our business, is to become 100% honest. Not to try to hide anything from Krishna, because you can't hide from him anyway. Okay? Is it really? Yes. Yes.
Regarding helping to others. Now,
yes.
By helping a person A, we help person B. Now, will that affect the person B's karmic results?
It depends on what the help is. It depends, you know, yes, to some degree, but how it will help and how much the help will be transmitted down the line to all the people involved depends on the quality of which kind of help you're doing. Suppose I, feed you once. That puts food in your belly one time. It doesn't put food in anybody else's belly. Even all the people who hear about it, they don't get fed by hearing about it. And how many people can I feed? I try to feed everybody, then I spend a fortune, and the next day the same people are hungry again, and I'm out of money. So, you know, it depends on the kind of work, the kind of welfare work you're doing. We recommend the transmission of the transcendental knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. First of all, it's inexhaustible. You won't run out of money if you give your life to the dissemination of this transcendental knowledge. You'll find, Prabhupada said, you just preach and Lakshmi will fly in the window. That means you just give your life to spreading this knowledge and all the money and all the assets you need will come automatically. So it depends on what kind of good you're doing. If that kind of good, it benefits everybody. Even the people who just hear. We're sitting here, I'm not feeding anybody, I'm not putting money in anybody's pocket. Although Vrindavan is a habit, you have a bandar. You have to give everybody 5 rupees. The sadhus, to make sure they come to your festival, you give everybody 5 rupees at the end of the feast. But I'm not doing that. I'm not giving it 5 rupees out to everybody. I'm not feeding anybody here. I'm talking and you're listening. But that, because it's Bhagavad Gita, and I hope I haven't distorted it too much, therefore it's the highest benefit for everybody who simply hears. The person who speaks, the vakta, the shrotri, and the others who are there. The person Shukadev was speaking to Parikshit. He was the prime hearer, Parikshit. But many other people were there. Rishis, Vyasadeva and Narada were there. And many other rishis, and other people too. Kings and women and other people. Everybody was, so many. They didn't have an electric sound system, but as many as could hear were listening. They all benefited. The person who speaks, the person who's being addressed, and everybody else who can hear get extreme benefit from the transmission or just the recitation of the transcendental knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the most effective welfare work. It acts most potently and it's also very economical. Okay? Yeah. Hare Krishna.
The person goes to the forest.
Yes.
He wants to control his senses. Let's say he's not able to control his mind, dwells on sense objects, sense gratification.
Yes.
Isn't the onus on Krishna to help him out? I mean, he doesn't mean to actually dwell on sense objects, but his mind rushes out. So shouldn't Krishna help him?
In the long run, Krishna has to help the foolish conditioned souls by letting him understand that they're foolish. If you're successful in being foolish, then you'll be a fool forever. Krishna arranges for you to become a failure so you can realize how foolish you are. So for that yogi to fail and to, creep back into the city looking for sense gratification is Krishna's mercy. If he sits in the forest just thinking about nonsense forever, what's accomplished? Better he fails at being a yogi and learns how to be a little more honest. That's Krishna's mercy. Krishna's mercy that we're frustrated in our material attempts. And Krishna arranges for everybody to be frustrated. Can anybody honestly say that your life has been a success every single day of your life? Or can you even pick one day that was completely successful where nothing went wrong? One day out of your whole life. Because it's the arrangement of Krishna. The material world is set up to create constant frustration, constant failure. a little bit of success, which we struggle for, and we become successful, then it's in the newspaper, headline. So someone's actually successful. But usually it's failure. That's Krishna's mercy. So we learn what fools we are and try to change our ways. That's what Krishna arranges for, disease, war, other kinds of misery, calamities, to teach us the material world's not the place to try to be happy. And living separately from God, in disconnection from God, is not the way to be successful. So that's arranged. This is all arranged. All the catastrophes of life are arranged to teach us that. Therefore, Kunti Devi prays, Vipadak santutakshasvad tatva tatva jagat guru bhavato darshanam yat syat apunar bhava darshanam. Please, she was talking about the catastrophes created by their enemies. There's different kinds of catastrophes. Some created by nature, some by the gods, some by your enemies. So the Pandavas had enemies, Duryodhana and his crew. And Kunti Devi had to bear the brunt of it, trying to protect these young men. But she prayed to Krishna, let these calamities come again and again. Because every time we're in total danger and have no support, I pray to you and you always appear and save us. Every time we're helpless and threatened by destruction, then you appear to us. So let the catastrophes happen again and again. Let this material world, let my life be a complete failure, complete disaster. And then maybe Krishna will reveal himself to me. Okay?
Yes.
Hare Krishna. Okay, so we can stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.